Hello and welcome to the Picture House podcast. My name is Sam Clements and I'm recording this in the Picture House pod grotto, but not by myself. I am joined by two very special guests to talk about some upcoming films at Picture House Cinemas. Today, we've got a brand new guest, which I'm very excited to introduce, Tom Dwyer.
Hello, Tom.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Tom, what do you do at Picture House?
So I work in marketing and sponsorship, very closely with you and Karina here.
And Tom, you've introduced Karina. Karina, thank you for coming back to the Pod Grotto for some more film chat. What have you been up to?
I've been watching films, actually.
No,
I know. Get out. It's crazy. Can we call this the grotto still? It feels a bit festive.
In my eyes, every time I come to the recording space, it's Christmas Day.
Okay, fair.
So, Tom, this is your first time on the podcast.
It is, yes.
Excited to have you on. I assume you're an avid listener and big fan of the show?
Of course, yeah, absolutely. Every episode. I think actually in my job interview I mentioned the Picture House podcast. That was my way in with you. With John Slattery, is it? From Mad Men?
Oh, wow. Yeah, you went way back.
Yeah. That was my way in through the front door was to talk about the podcast. So it's good to
remember that interview actually very well. You know what? You did okay.
Yeah.
You also turned up to that job interview wearing a suit, which was just magnificent.
I know.
Oh my God, we need to see this suit. Yes,
I've got
please.
A lot of stick in this, but you know, it's fine.
It got you the job. You said the right things. You're a snappy dresser.
It's nice to come full circle.
I'm excited for you to be on here. I have the luxury of sitting next to Tom here and we have some brilliant chats on film. So I thought, do you know what? Let's get him on the pod.
Stick a microphone in front of him. He's wasting his chat. So what we do at the beginning of the podcast, Tom, as you should know, because you're an avid fan.
Of course.
Is we talk about what's currently on in Picture House cinemas and who's coming to watch them. So we sort of break this down into a top five films currently playing at Picture House cinemas. What I like to do before we run through the list is to actually get my guests to have a guess. What do you think? Is it going to be in our top five highest grossing films from the week just gone at Picture House cinemas?
I think Vice is going to be in there.
The Adam McKay film.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. That's a solid guess.
Yeah.
Any more?
Green Book.
Okay. Strong guesses. You've gone straight in there with new releases. Karina, what do you think will be in this list?
I assume that Vice is in there because everybody's wanting to watch it after the amount of awards it's gathered.
The amount of donuts Christian Bale ate for that transformative performance as
Dick
Cheney.
I mean, that's why I went to see it. I wanted to see what the fuss was about.
When I saw it, they gave us free donuts.
What?
So, and I took two, guys. I'm not afraid to admit it.
It's all right. I don't think you're looking quite on Dick Cheney levels yet.
I need a few more. But
right. Hey,
if they keep going to these screenings. So, in at number five, we've got, it's not even a film, guys. It's a piece of what is often called event cinema. It's a Met Opera. Live from New York. Carmen was beamed into our cinemas over the weekend, and so many people saw it. That one screening of an opera, it knocked out a film which has been playing several times a day.
That's exciting.
It's good. The fans are definitely coming out in force for the opera.
Nice.
In at number four, it's The Favourite, which has been in this list ever since The Favourite has been released.
Wow, that's amazing. It's still going.
I think we've spoken about it on two or three podcasts previously.
Lots and lots of award nominations there. The BAFTAs are coming up, so we'll see if how well it fares.
See if Olivia Colman is crowned queen.
Oh, she's fantastic.
Have you seen The Favourite, Tom?
I have. I've seen it twice.
Oh, wow. So you're part of the problem.
That's me. Yeah. No, it's great. I loved it. I'm a big fan of Yorgos Lanthimos's previous work. I think I just love with this the audience it's getting out, how it's his previous films would not have the appeal that this one does, whereas I think a lot of people are coming out for the period drama, the Olivia Colman, and then being surprised by what they're getting, which is good. I've had a lot of conversations with people who've seen it, who hated it and loved it, but the fact they're coming to see it is really good.
It's a nice film to see with an audience, whether it surprises you or delights you.
Yeah.
I saw Tyrannosaur on the weekend and that broke me in two a little bit, but it did remind me of how brilliant she is, Olivia Colman is. But I kind of want to see the Favourite again just to kind of make sure that my last memory of Olivia Colman is in something a bit more cheery.
Maybe watch an episode of Peep
Show.
Just
go back
or
and
I should just do that.
She's well good in Peep Show.
True.
She should have probably got a BAFTA for Tyrannosaur. I don't know who did win that year, but I can't watch that film again. It upset me too much.
Yeah. It's stuck with me.
So in at number three, it's a little film called Can You Ever Forgive Me, which came out on Friday, which is fantastic. Also Oscar nominated for Richard E. Grant. And I think the screenplay maybe, Nicole Holofcener and
Melissa McCarthy as well.
Of course, the star.
Yes, she's brilliant.
It's funny, isn't it?
Like, Richard E. Grant also is they're brilliant together.
So this is Mario Heller's follow-up to Diary of a Teenage Girl, a film I quite liked. And then, like, I think genuinely last year I was just like, whatever happened to her? Because it's been quite a while since she'd made anything. And I'd seen she's done quite a lot of US TV shows, but like hadn't made another film. And I thought, oh, maybe she's gone into TV. It's probably a bit more lucrative. But here she is now. She was secretly working on this little film.
And
sweeping up all of the awards. So Tom, you saw this film quite recently.
Saw it last night. Yeah, I loved it. It was, I don't know what I was expecting, but it was funnier than I thought it was going to be. And also just a lot sadder. It's really heartbreaking. And I think both Richard E. Grant and Melissa McCarthy are so fantastic at just kind of portraying that the loneliness they both have and how that leads them to make these really bad decisions. But yeah, really excellent film.
Well, they're two oddballs who are sort of thrown together through circumstances. Mm. They're just chance, really. They meet in a bar and they happen to remember each other from a party years and years and years ago.
Yeah.
And they just bond over that. And I do like that those two outsiders are thrown together. And I also love how Richard E. Grant plays his character. He's like a little puppy. He's like a friend.
Yeah.
And she'll talk to me and we can, and like, I don't think he really has that. He has these flings with people and he's, I think, basically just looking to keep a roof over his head every night by hook or by crook.
Yeah.
But he's got a friend he can actually see in the days between those and they bond.
He's such a grafter as well. He's so charismatic and he's on the outside portraying this life of him being quite a dandy-esque dude out on the New York scene, but actually there's these little glimmers that show you that he's actually struggling quite a lot, but it never actually takes away from how much you enjoy the magnificence of his character as well.
Absolutely. I think he and what's really nice about this sort of award season is I think he's become the star of the show in terms of the red carpets and the parties and the social media. Like, he is having a whale of a time.
Yeah, he's loving it.
Just loving the ride.
If you don't follow him on Twitter and Instagram, I highly recommend you do. When he goes to award shows, he's getting selfies with people. Like, he's living the dream. 61 years old and so enjoying this part of his job. All right. In at number two, it's Vice. Tom, you were correct. Karina, you were correct. Have you both seen Vice?
Yeah, I have.
I have.
And where do you stand on Vice?
I think, I'm not the biggest fan of Adam McKay, but I did like Vice. I thought Christian Bale is fantastic. Sam Rockwell as George W. Bush is inspired. I think it's a fascinating story. I don't know, it made me want to go and read more about Dick Cheney and the kind of history surrounding it.
I don't think anyone has ever said those words.
Well, just like, because he so little about him going in, and then it covers the whole...
It's like a history lesson, isn't
it? Yeah, from like the 70s and Richard Nixon all the way through to modern day, and how he's just kind of been in the background the whole time.
I think that's a problem with it, though. It is a bit like a history lesson, but there's too much history trying to be covered in the one film. And it is fascinating, and there's these little scenes in isolation which make you furious in the way that it's supposed to, because he's basically outing the whole show of the American politics system. Yeah, I did leave with my head a bit spun, going like, what? Where do I even start with what I've just watched?
It's quite damning stuff. And I felt a little bit similar after I watched The Big Short, which was about, how people were irresponsible with other people's money.
I liked that. I preferred that. I think it was because it was more streamlined into one particular incident, and we could all connect to it because the financial crash affected us all in some way. Not to say that American politics doesn't affect us, because it does, but it's a little more distant. Whereas I think, the Ryan Gosling I really enjoyed as well. I thought he was very good in... Wait, was he in it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, before I was like, wait, too much silence here. Nobody's nodding at me.
Adam McKay does have this band of actors, this sort of rep company.
Like Steve Carell.
Steve Carell's great.
In so many
great
of his films. Mm. And Christian Bale is, of course, he's drumming, isn't he, in The Big Short?
Brilliant cast. Brilliant cast, but it's very exhausting to keep up with everything. And there's these jokes that are landing and some aren't landing. And some of them, I think, again, in isolation, some of them would make great short films.
Yeah.
Like the scene with the ordering on the menu.
Oh, yeah, that was like Monty Python.
Yeah, right? That was very clever. But yeah, there's just a lot of jokes. And I don't know if it actually really picked up the traction on the narrative storytelling in the end, the linear narrative.
I almost felt he would have kind of trusted the story a bit more and not had as many, all the stylistic flourishes throughout.
The fishing and the Dick Cheney likes to fish, guys, I get it.
I think those scenes and the script and the acting is good enough on its own to carry that, and I just found it quite jarring.
What I like is that it's a film in the Oscar race which is challenging like the conventional sort of film form. Like, there's lots of jokes about, like, I think credits roll halfway through the movie as part of one of the gags.
Yeah.
And it's like bold that they're doing that, and it's been received so well by the Academy and the Oscar and the BAFTA voters and stuff. But I don't know, for me it just felt like a little bit try hard. Like, you're exactly. Right, trust the material. Mm-hmm. You've got some good stuff there. Performances, cannot fault them. Christian Bale, as ever,
absolutely
does some brilliant work.
Yeah.
Steve Carell is probably my MVP because he's quietly working away there. He's not in the whole. He's not in a whole lot of it, but where he's in, he's quite good. And he starts up high, then he's sort of a down and out, working in a closet, I think, by the end of the film. It's quite funny seeing that power shift.
I think it'd be good broken apart, like in the same way, The Thick of It. For instance, if it was like if it was like a Netflix season that was across six parts, it could really focus on different elements of the story. So the family life and I think what was most interesting to me is the daughters and how one of them is gay and how they have to, the whole family have to make this decision to go against her being a gay woman and yet trying to say that gay marriage isn't something that they believe in. I think that was the most interesting part for me, and there wasn't enough of that that was illuminated.
Yeah, I think it's more of the Chaney family.
Yeah.
He had some like hints that it was quite interesting, and he loves his family more than anything else. It's kind of the only thing he actually is really positive about, that and power. And it was nice to see him take a stand on, like, you know, where a line he wouldn't cross at the beginning of the film, and that's like, you know, his daughter's sexuality.
Mm. Yeah, there's definitely a Sopranos-esque HBO series in there.
Right. But also Bale could just, if they started Sopranos again, get Bale in.
He can just play them all.
He can keep the Chaney costume. So in at number one, it's Green Book. Brand new release, also out the same day as Can You Ever Forgive Me, a big day for Oscar and BAFTA releases that week. Green Book, we previewed it at Picture House on Boxing Day, I believe. It's kind of a nice Christmassy sort of film. Karina, what did you think of Green Book?
So I really like Green Book. It's certainly attending to an audience that want a nice feel-good movie. It's hitting all the right notes in terms of a swelling, affectionate American movie trying to do good. I think that the music in it is wonderful. This bromance, this road movie, it's very funny and wry in parts. But what I was compelled to do afterwards is find out a lot more about Don Shirley. And I think once you know a lot more about the history behind it, it's actually much more interesting than that, than what's actually played in the film. So I would just compel anybody that has seen it to actually go back and take a look at what the actual story was in reality. And it throws up an interesting conversation here about what an adaptation can get away with and when it should be respectful to the genuine truth. But if you're looking at this film just purely from a well-told narrative story with good actors, great chemistry between two very well-seasoned and brilliant actors, then it's a very good watch.
Viggo Mortensen and Mahershala Ali in the starring roles, and they do spend a lot of the film, and it's just the two of them together in a car usually, and you have these really good dialogue scenes between them, and I think as an acting masterclass, so much fun. And it's also quite fun because they're in a car, they're not facing each other, they're both like staring in front, and I think to have that sort of dialogue and like, it's quite fun to watch a character be able to say something to someone else but not look them in the eye, but then like throw something back or like pass them something. There's a lot of food sharing in this film as well. Do not watch this film on
food,
an empty stomach.
Food scenes are good. But it's saying a lot about American history, and so it's all based on the Negro motorist book called The Green Book, where it basically told black people where they could go, where they wouldn't get too much harassment. So that in itself is just a fascinating thing to know that existed. And just in terms of the different ways racism manifests itself in terms of class and power structures, and it's tackled very handsomely. And I think it's very interesting to think about, and it's very timely as well in terms of the different shades and levels of what racism can be. So it's thoughtful in that way.
I think something that appealed to me is it was a road movie.
Yeah.
I love road movies. Planes, Trains and Automobiles, one of my favourite films of all time.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
This sort of had hints of that as well, like two people bonding who really don't want to be together in that confined space. And and I think it was a bit of a crowd pleaser.
It's a Christmas movie as well.
And absolutely. And
it's a bit of a head scratcher why it didn't come out before Christmas, because it's such a perfect film to watch over the Christmas period, but hopefully years to come it'll be a Christmas classic.
I imagine there'll be some TV networks fighting over the rights of this one, who
for
gets
sure.
the Christmas screening of this.
But I think just those two actors, it's just such a joy to watch them bounce off each other. I think Viggo Mortensen's another kind of Christian Bale in his he's unrecognisable in every film he does, like comparing Aragorn to him in Green Book.
In Green Book, it was like he was channeling Joey Tribbiani from Friends.
Yeah.
Like when there's scenes where he eats a whole pizza. He doesn't chop it up. He like rolls it and just eats. That's amazing.
And, yeah, Mahershala Ali, obviously from Moonlight, and True Detective, if anyone's watching that at the moment, but and just one of the best actors working today, I think.
For
and
sure.
Those two, given that space to just go off on each other, it's great. It's, yeah. Yeah, really elevates the film.
The surprising thing is it's from director Peter Farrelly, who his like last film was Dumb and Dumber 2.
Yeah,
it's a real
that blows
turnaround
my mind a little.
Yeah. But I think like yeah, I think he did a good job. I thought it was really well put together, and like yeah, maybe on a script level it didn't do what it needed to do, or maybe it could do more, or maybe it didn't need to do it because it's been made as a piece of entertainment. But
yeah,
I guess the real life story is out there for people to
yeah,
discover.
Certainly a conversation starter, but for what it is, it's a very well told story in the way that the director wanted to tell it.
Mm. And I think the film is kind of a hoot. I really bought into it, and I was very, very entertained. All right, so that's our number one. That's a pretty good lineup of films right there. We got opera, we got some Oscar stuff. But yeah, these are all, it's Oscar season. This is what we're all about.
Mm.
And this week's new releases, also very much in that Oscar conversation. So we got a couple of things on the menu, If Beale Street Can Talk, and I'm going to say Capernaum.
Correct.
For our film. So shall we talk about Barry Jenkins' new movie, If Beale Street Can Talk?
Yes,
his
please.
Follow-up to Moonlight. Now, Karina, I think you're the biggest fan in this room, but just purely because you've seen it the most.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I've seen it now 3 times, and it's only after the 3rd time I'm watching the book that I really, really am ready to rave about it. The first time I watched it, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I just thought, wow, this is a really overly romantic movie. I'm not sure if I'm ready for this level of romance. But after reading the book and looking at how meticulously it's been adapted to cinema, and listening to the Q&As from Barry Jenkins, he is a very smart man.
Mm.
Barry Jenkins really knows what he's doing, and he's leaned in to the book where he needs to and has been respectful to James Baldwin's work, who is one of the greatest American writers ever. But he also knows that the cinematic form of visual art requires a different sensibility. And anybody that's read the book, and I do suggest you read the book, it's a very short one, the ending is somewhat different. And I think what Jenkins is doing here is really making sure that the representation of the black community is different when you're up, when it's on that medium of the cinema. And he's done a very good job of making sure that black love is represented and the pain of black people is taken away when it can be. And he's done a very good job on that. And you just need to compare the book and the film to be able to really appreciate that, and I'm glad that I've managed to do the both, because when I first watched it I wouldn't have been able to have that real deeper appreciation of the artistry between both of these men. And it's so interesting that they've both managed to harness the internal thoughts of this very young girl, Tish, and everything that she's going through and everything that she's witnessing and the pain and the pregnancy and the love, the absolute love that she's got for her fiance. And they are just magnetic together. And they just that look that they have between each other is just like a sense of relief and butterflies. And it's just so heartwarming. But yeah, sometimes it's a bit like, all right, we get it. They're in love. I want to see something else. But also just the companionship. There's a real lovely bromance in there. I think, Tom, you were talking a lot about that particular scene that you really enjoyed.
It's the same thing that I loved about Moonlight as well, is how Barry Jenkins just gives characters space that often in films would be portrayed as maybe stereotypes or wouldn't have quite the same agency in their stories. The scene that springs to mind is where he meets his friend. Is it Brian Tyrese Henry? Is that?
I'm going to say yes.
Paperboy from Atlanta. He meets him on the street, and there's this really long scene of them going back to his house, and they're just talking, and it takes a long time, but eventually he tells him about his experience in prison and how he's not doing so well. It's just the time he allows these characters to sit and have that conversation, just to act and get that across, I think, is really fantastic. Same in Moonlight, where there's a scene where Janelle Monáe and Mahershala Ali, again, they're talking to the young Chiron.
Yeah,
they're talking to him about, and he's asking about whether he sells drugs and if he sells drugs to his mum. And again, the dialogue is minimal, but it's such a long scene because it just allows the camera to linger on the actors. And I think that's what he just does so well. And I think, yeah, going to it being kind of overly romantic, I think that's then counteracted by the kind of the situation they're in, and the, you know, there's this amazing love they have, but then it's in such a harsh circumstance. Yeah, I think it kind of balances out.
I mean, I'm not mad at Jenkins. Like, he could do that. I kind of feel like he could do whatever he wants. Mm. But, and yeah, we have so few representations of people that look like them having a love like that, and it's just such a beautiful way to, like, just plow on in and go, yeah, this is a romance and no holds barred. And yeah, and just going back to your point, the masculinity element, and just talking about how men take the time to unpack all the issues that they've got, and one beer, two beers, but only after the third beer, when you say, are you okay, they really say, actually, I'm not okay.
Yeah.
Just real respect to let those characters breathe and divulge and blossom into genuine, just being more real with one another. And it looks gorgeous. It looks absolutely gorgeous. It's just dripping in all these, like, greens.
It's that every aspect of it is so immaculately done, with the soundtrack and just the costumes and the cinematography. Yeah.
It's almost like Wes Anderson style level of matching up colours. And
the nice thing about the film is Barry Jenkins plays with the form of the story. It's not told in a linear fashion. There's lots of cutting forward and backwards in time. At the beginning of it, our protagonist, Tish, finds out she's pregnant, but her lover is now in prison. He's been arrested, and sort of cuts, but, you know, so their journey, when, you know, down the line, when she's trying to prove he's innocent and she's talking to him in prison, to the family, to them together in New York streets. And it's, you never lose track of the story, which is really, you know, that's always quite impressive. But Barry Jenkins plays with the form even more than just chopping up time, and he really, like, focuses on how people are feeling just by showing their faces on screen. And he has these really great slow motion shots where the camera's just looking directly into people's faces. And he did the same technique in Moonlight, only with Naomi Harris, though. And I think he said with this one he wanted to build on that sort of intimacy. So it looks amazing when they have those close-ups, because the camera is shooting at a really, really high frame rate. It's like going 120 frames a second, and normally it's 24. So you can capture every single detail on people's face when you're going so fast in the camera.
Uh-huh.
And I think he was just saying, like, he would just get the actors to sort of be in the scene, but to just sit there. And they would shoot with these really fast moving cameras.
That makes sense now. Because there's so many shots where you're just looking at them and you're just drinking it all in.
Their eyes and their face tell such a great story.
Faces.
You don't need anything else.
Yeah.
It's almost kind of that jarring breaking of the fourth wall, where you're not used to just having someone look from a cinema screen at you, but then it just kind of really puts you in that situation.
And it highlights his work as a director as well, because, again, in the Q&A that I was listening to, which was at the Ritzy a couple of weeks ago, he talks about how putting a camera in front of an actor's face is actually a very daunting prospect to an actor, because they're not used to that. And Tish, who's a relative newcomer, Kiki Lane, it took her a while to really be able to emote into a dark hole as opposed to reacting off somebody. And for the result of that beautiful, that beautiful shot that she has on her face on a constant level of just awe and relief and love, to think that she was just staring down the barrel of a camera, that's Barry Jenkins at work there, being able to get that from her. Yeah, and the lovemaking scene when she first goes back to his house as well is sexy. It's really sexy. And again, and this is another thing that Tom was telling me about at the Q&A that he went to at the Ritzy, and just the way he originally thought that the female gaze would have been her sitting there kind of patiently waiting for him to come over from the radio, from the record player. But actually, after showing the original cut to his female filmmaker friends, they were like, why did you shut the shot? Why are we not looking at him? He's literally
taking his clothes off.
There's a hot guy. And he is hot. He makes he makes Y-fronts sexy again.
That's true. Barry Jenkins at the Q&A made the point that, if it was a woman in that situation, of course you'd cut to that and show a sexy lady taking her clothes off. But why would you not do the same for...
And I think, again, that for Barry Jenkins to actually consult his female filmmaker friends, who have the honesty to say, Barry, you messed up, go back, film it again, and him listen, that gets a kudos in my book.
Good job, Barry.
Yes.
Yeah, really, really exciting that he's got another film out, and it feels like Moonlight was only, you know, 2 years ago.
God,
and he's
yeah.
got something else in the works already. He's not wasting any time.
Great.
Yes.
So I think that's a recommendation for If Beale Street Can
certainly.
Talk.
Certainly.
We ordered a room quite like this.
Especially with Valentine's on the way.
It's Valentine's Day. Yeah, it's out Valentine's Day, but it's out before Valentine's at Select Cinemas. So
it's previews,
definitely
but
go
yeah,
catch
officially
it.
Everywhere on Valentine's Day. If you're not sure what to watch on Valentine's Day, this is like definitely, and you want pure romance, then If Beale Street Can Talk is definitely the one. If you want, you know, like some fun cartoon stuff, the Lego movie is also out. You know, let's not, you know, like be filmist here. But yeah, if you want to hit up the romance, then go for If Beale Street Can Talk. Definitely more romantic than the Lego movie too.
I don't know. Lego, there's romance in Lego.
Yeah,
blocks connecting together.
The Lego Movie 2 is quite a good film. I enjoyed it. We're not going to talk about it on the podcast because I'm the only one who's seen it. But just going to throw it in there. The next one we're going to talk about is Capernaum, the new film from director Nadine Lebecki, who during my career at Picture House, I think we've played like two of her films in our cinemas to varying degrees. The first one being Caramel, which is an excellent rom-com, Lebanese rom-com. How often do you see one of those? Where Nadine Lebecki actually plays one of the leads. She's so good in it. For this film, she's purely behind the camera. And this film has been nominated for an Oscar.
Well, not purely. She's in front of the camera for a very small cameo when she's actually in the docs as a lawyer.
Is she the lawyer?
Oh, really? That's is that her?
Yeah. I was wondering about that.
It's a very clever role because she's putting herself in our position of people who are observing this story unfold. It's very, very smart.
I wonder, when I watched the film, I was like, is that Nadine Lebecki? And then I didn't think about it anymore.
She doesn't say hardly anything, but she's looking and she's observing, and you can tell that that's the position she wants us to be in.
That's what I, yeah, so eagle-eyed listeners, do look out for Nadine Lebecki, who you will see on the red carpets at the BAFTAs and the Oscars in the coming weeks. Capernaum's had such a great release out into the world. It premiered at Cannes. It won the Grand Jury Prize, which I think is basically the sort of silver medal at the Cannes Film Festival. It was hotly tipped for the Palme d'Or, but Hirokazu Koreeda got in there, foiled again. but his film Shoplift is also very good. So we're going to see, so she's up for Best Foreign Language Film, up against some quite big hitters. Films like Roma, Shoplifters, etc.
It's
the only female.
Great category.
That's true. And actually, the Oscars and BAFTAs are quite bad at sort of acknowledging female filmmakers. And not only is she one of the only female filmmakers in that category, but in the whole award show.
Yeah, it's disappointing. I mean, it's great for her, but obviously the representation of women in the whole award season is continually bad.
Agreed. How do you think this film will do at the Oscars and BAFTAs? Just on some bit of awards punditry before we get into the movie.
I think the category is tough.
I know, they're all amazing films.
They are very, very good films. But Capernaum is an excellent, excellent film. And I'm not just saying that. I've seen it now three times in lots of different contexts. And I most enjoyed the last time I watched it because it was with a public paying audience and it was sold out. And the lady I was sitting next to, everyone, in fact, was crying. I think she was Lebanese as well, because she was saying, oh, you know, I never get to see my people up on screen like that, told so genuinely. And it was really nice to feel that emotion in the room. But also what was interesting is how many people laughed along with it and detected the humour. In the other screenings I've been in, which are more industry-led, it's been a bit more quiet and sort of sombre and head-nodding into the screen going, yes. But the public really made it feel very emotional and sad, because there are elements of real sadness in it, but there's such hope and joy in it at the same time. And this relationship that is building between Zane, the little boy, who is trying to sue his parents for bringing him life because he just doesn't understand why they keep having children when they can't look after them on the streets of Lebanon. But there's a real gusto to the little boy and how much he is going to survive and how much he wants to thrive, and he's taking that independence, and he's a little rascal as well. He's really funny. he's got smarts.
I think it's kind of similar to the Florida Project last year or 2 years ago, in the sense that, you know, you're kind of seeing this world that's quite tough and harsh, but through the perspective of children, and you're kind of coming at it from a child's perspective where, you know, that's something that we can all relate to, and seeing the elements of them kind of just having fun in those worlds. And
yeah, absolutely.
But then that kind of then adds to the, I just remember the scenes with him and the baby.
Yeah.
It's just so tough to watch, because knowing the danger they're in, and they're so fragile, but then, yeah, it's a, It's really brilliant. I think it's great that it's getting the recognition it is at the awards. Mm. As you say, it is a relatively small film from Lebanon. It's getting these backings from the academies, which is hopefully means people are going
to
see it.
How often do we even get to see films from Lebanon in UK cinemas? Mm. Yeah. And this one is having quite a big release. It's had such a big festival circuit run and now the awards run. Like, it's really amazing for it to be caught up in it. I guess the power of a story about children, it appeals to audiences all across the world. Yeah. And Nadine Lebecki's done such a good job directing her young cast. Like, how do you even direct a baby?
It's amazing.
I can't think of a baby performance.
I know. She's managed to draw out such astounding performances from these young children who have never been in front of a camera before. Mm. She really took a long time to get everything done right. Hours and hours of footage that she had to draw, she wanted to draw through to get it right. She saw hundreds of kids before she stepped on Treasure and Zane. And yeah, you can really tell her attention to detail is just profound, and it's really, really paid off. And the storytelling is excellent. And yeah, she's literally, I think, the only actor in it, and she's only in it for a minute. And like I said before, it's just because she wants us to see from her point of view as the spectator of these things that are going on in the world, and we need to ask ourselves certain questions and ask ourselves if we're happy with the way the world is spinning, you know?
Absolutely. I think it is a real masterclass in directing, because she's having to thread together all of the... I mean, she gets people to perform really naturally, which is amazing, but it's no mean feat getting non-actors to be so compelling on screen.
Absolutely.
And the way they shot it, they had lots of like hidden cameras, and they had to shoot it sort of in secret when they were shooting on the streets, and the behind-the-scenes stuff's really fascinating.
Yeah.
It's quite a challenging film about a challenging subject, but Zane, our protagonist, who is on the streets for most of the film, you see his poverty-stricken life and his bond with this baby and stuff, like, he's so watchable.
Yeah, he's mesmerizing. Absolutely mesmerizing. But what I've also enjoyed is just seeing the reactions. So I haven't been in any screening or spoken to anybody who hasn't had a physical or emotional reaction to this film, and people just saying, what can I do now? I can't just go on my life knowing that these things are happening. What can I do? So it's really moved a lot of people. So yeah, I would prepare for an emotional response, and on both good and bad, you know. It makes you want to do something, but it's also a really well-told story in a beautiful way from a very, very talented filmmaker who's certainly one to watch.
The popular response to this film is to cry. Every screening I've been to has had people in floods of tears, and Nadine stayed around for quite a lot of Q&As while she's been in London, and
yeah,
people just
brilliant.
In tears during the Q&A, which she must be used to it by now, but it must be quite weird. Like, the lights come up and people are asking you questions whilst they're in tears.
Yeah.
What did they do to you? But no, it's a really wonderful film. So that comes out on the 22nd of February after the BAFTAs, so we'll know if it's won an award there, but the week before the Oscars. So let's see. I can't wait for more people to see this film. It's been so great seeing the responses to it.
Yeah, and she's so big on social media. If you want to get any more insight into Nadine Lebecki, pop on her Instagram, because she's all over it. And it's so nice to see how much she's actually, the humbleness that she's enjoying. Well, she's humbly enjoying all the praise that she's getting, and it's so sweet.
A bit like Richard E. Grant. Follow follow Nadine Lebecki, and I really hope at the Oscars
and
they
Glenn
get a picture
Close's
together.
Dog.
Okay.
Also big on Instagram.
That's good. I'm glad they're working hard. There we are. That's February. There is a whole ton of films out in February, and a lot of them are detailed in our lovely new magazine, Picture House Recommends, which you can pick up in cinemas. Karina has written in it.
Tom has
written nothing for it.
Sorry.
Next time.
Next time would be great. There are lots of Picture House staff reviews in there, which is great, and there's some really amazing films coming out in the coming weeks. Looking forward to talking about them on this show. But we're sport for choice at the moment at the cinema. Definitely good to go and catch up.
Mm. It's a good time because there's basically nothing else to do out there because it's cold and wet.
That's
so
true,
stay indoors in the cinema, grab yourself a hot chocolate, and wait until March until you can start stopping the hibernation.
I've been quite enjoying, whilst I love all of the awards films, a lot of them have come out on release now and they're sort of playing again and again. I'm quite enjoying that we're getting some quite new, sort of a little bit kind of bananas films coming out, like some new blockbusters, which it takes a special type of blockbuster to come out in February because you're going up against the awards stuff. So people don't put out their really, really, really big films. They sort of put out the riskier blockbusters. And in cinemas this week, we've got Alita Battle Angel, which I quite liked. I had a good time.
I'm in for it.
Director Robert Rodriguez, producer James Cameron, and it was an amazing cast. But yeah, it's a real special effects treat.
That's some heavyweights behind the production there.
Absolutely, big names. But that's just a bit of fun. I think especially after seeing quite serious films, nice watch, fun film. Also, Lego Movie 2 was a lot of fun. And there's a film coming out which we're playing at Picture House in a couple of weeks' time called The Kid Who Would Be King, which is from director Joe Cornish, who did Attack the Block off of the Adam and Joe show on Radio 6.
Mr. Cornballs.
Cornballs. And this film is unique. It's a British film produced by Working Title. So, you know, they're the stalwart of British filmmaking. And it's a kid's fantasy movie with an unknown cast, although one of the young actors is Andy Serkis's son, although he's not been in anything before. And it's about these kids who go on this quest to... They find King Arthur's sword, and like this evil witch is going to escape from somewhere and she's going to threaten humanity, and it falls to these four kids to sort of protect us from this monster. And it was really bold, really original, and I had a really good time watching it. So would recommend that. It has a soundtrack by Damon Albarn. Always good.
Okay. Yeah, sold.
I'm excited about that one.
Patrick Stewart plays a wizard. He plays the wizard Merlin. That's quite fun. And Celia Imrie's son plays a young Patrick Stewart. There's a whole lot of people's sons in this film. Anyway, I saw that the other day. I just wanted to mention it because we did a podcast with Joe Cornish earlier today and he was delightful.
Oh, I should also mention my podcast with Nadine Lebecki, which you can catch on other episodes of our wonderful podcast.
Absolutely. Check the pod feed. Well, because everybody's been in town for the awards, we've been sort of spoilt for choice. We've also got Richard E. Grant and Melissa McCarthy. You got to talk to them.
I did.
Back on the pod feed. We've got Robert Rodriguez talking about Alita Battle Angel and Joe Cornish coming up. So yeah, lots of specials dotted around.
And all is true.
And all is true.
All
Blimey.
Is true.
Blimey!
Is it?
The new Kenneth Branagh film. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think that's enough food for thought, cinema for thought. Thank you, Karina, for talking to us today.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, Tom, for making your pod debut.
Thank you very much for having me.
What a lot of fun having you on. Do you want to come back on again? Did we do okay? Were
sure.
We welcoming?
If didn't screw it up too much, then...
If you can come back next time with your suit,
okay,
then
I'll see
fine.
What I can do. Yeah.
Okay.
Have a Mad Men style.
Oh, yes.
Get the whiskies in.
Yeah. We've got Twix. What more do you want?
I'm sold. You're very welcome back, Dom. Thank you for coming on. And thank you, listeners, for listening. Please do rate, review, subscribe on your podcatcher of choice. Every rating really helps new listeners discover the show. And if you like this show, then please do subscribe because we put out lots of specials that we just talked about and regular shows from our lovely Pod Grotto, as I mentioned earlier. And on that, a big shout out to Silk Factory, owners of the Pod Grotto and proud supporters of the Picture House podcast. Silk Factory are an awesome film marketing creative agency making the coolest trailers and creative content out there across TV, digital and social platforms. We think they're great, so go and check them out and their fantastic workout at www.thesilkfactory.co and do follow their Twitter feed because they've got some really cool social media videos at the moment, especially for the film Green Book. I've been enjoying sharing those on the Picture House pod feed. Thank you all and we'll be back in a couple of weeks.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.